This is The Playbook.
All right, this is Dave Meltzer live at Collision. This may be year number 7 or 8 ever since we've been in New Orleans. And we have hijacked the Next Stage podcast to do a little Entrepreneurs The Playbook edition of the Next Stage podcast. And I got two extraordinary Vancouverans. Is that what you call you guys? Vancouverans?
Vancouverites.
Vancouverites. It's so right.
Nothing to do with the Vancouverians.
Yeah, very good. Vancouver's right. Tanis George is here with me and Joe Tolzman. Is this your first Collision?
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, that's
literally
a surprise.
Walked in the door 30 minutes ago.
So as a serial entrepreneur.
I know.
Have you heard of it before?
Oh, yeah. I had heard of it, but just too much head down.
Yeah, being an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
How about you, Joe? You're a serial entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Serious and serial.
Serial and serious.
I'm just a serial.
First time at the Collision, but it's so awesome to be here. Mm-hmm. It's 35, 40,000 people. Such a great energy. It's
yeah,
awesome to be here.
There's a lot of, it's a community of people that want to help each other and know people who can help each other. And yet you have to navigate so much as we do as entrepreneurs. And I want to start with probably the most pressing issue that I've learned over the last 35 years as an entrepreneur, and it's capitalization of companies. And one of the things I see at Collision, Web Summit, Rise, they even had it in Brazil, now that the economy's turning a little bit more challenging, is that people once again are realizing it's really difficult to raise money. And yet, raising money and making money are the two common denominators to success. And I'm going to start with you, Tanya, as well. I'm starting a fund, and I think it's the first. It's a white middle-aged male fund for women and women of color. So I only want white middle-aged men. That's all their money. I want their money, like me.
Okay.
But we are only funding women of color because I think my experience has been this disconnect of people like me wanting so bad to support people like you and other people like you.
Yeah.
And now with the economy turning, I think it's less than 2% of women and women of color that are getting any money. And yet 73% of the earth is women and people of color, and let alone in America. And I think if you take out the Stanford people, it drops below 1%. So I'm not going to fund anyone from Stanford.
Right.
I'll take their money. If you're a white middle-aged man from John Hennessy, please, you're welcome. I'll take all the money you can. Do you see where I'm going with this connection? And do you think I'm on the right track to helping to bridge and inspire people to put our money where it's best utilized statistically into women and people of color?
Yeah, for me, when I speak on the topic of women in tech, because obviously I get asked to speak on this topic, where I prefer to go is to encourage women to consider raising money. I think there's a gap. We often find that we have the mommypreneur, where women tend to feel more comfortable thinking smaller scale, maybe. And the
idea, so better ideas with smaller scale.
Yeah, and so, but I encourage people to get educated on the process of raising money, and I think there's this disconnect that it's going to be difficult, that that maybe my business isn't good enough, strong enough to scale. So I often encourage women to really look at the potential of their business and say, hey, is this something you could take global? Most of the time, they think not most of the time. But there are often people who are thinking smaller scale for their business because many times they have so many other commitments as well. So I often try and encourage women because the money's there. I firmly believe that it's not that, let's say, men don't want to fund women's businesses. The money's there. Women need to be more confident in going after it and confident in a business that can grow and scale to the level it needs to grow and scale in order to attract investment. So that's where I like to educate and push people forward.
And I love that accountability approach. Do you ever get women, like with the female quotient, like a Shelley Zalis, getting on you a little bit about like,
it's not, but you know, I'm comfortable.
You're
I'm comfortable. I get to be that voice because of my background, so I get to be. And I have had more than a few women come up to me after hearing me talk and say, thank you so much for letting me know that it's not, I'm not always going to reach a wall, that on the merits of a great business idea, I can exceed. And I just, that's what I tell everyone, just listen, the world is greedy. And if you've got a good business, everyone will hand you money.
Yeah, the color green is definitely English and worldwide language, always has been.
Yeah.
I study history to learn human nature, and greed is certainly, since I've gone all the way back to Sanskrit, part of that, when they wrote the rules of being human, that you know, others are mirrors of ourselves.
Yeah.
So it's so interesting. Now, Joe, from your perspective, you're where I think most of the money is going to be made in the future. And it's in traditional business. And when I say that, that the best businesses in the world right now haven't applied the technology because they haven't had to. So if you were an HVAC company or a plumber, an electrician, a lot of those people still use dispatchers. They haven't even implemented simple solutions that can double the EBITDA with efficiencies. Now you're in that business with your company, and you took, you were in the restoration business, and you saw a hole, which, by the way, Tanya, I think women are accepted. Say again, please.
Tanis.
Yeah, Tanis. let's just make sure I get that right from the beginning, so I'm going to have to redo the introduction. Please, Tanis,
okay,
George, and Joe Tolsman, right?
Right.
If you only knew how many names I have today.
I can imagine.
Thank you, Tanis.
All good.
But I will redo the intro. But to that measure, I find women, they like will find the true need. They'll put like a baby in a car when it's cold, and they're like, why don't they have like a car seat where you don't have to put the jacket on and off?
Right.
And men will literally for 100 years use that car seat and never be like, why don't we have a car seat that does that? You took that perspective in the restoration business, and your business is exploding. There's been a big gap in restoration quoting to insurance companies. Well, what do you think the perspective was coming from Indo America? Like, what gave you that insight of like, this is a big hole in a traditional business. I have a $1 billion idea.
Yeah. You know, it's all about efficiency. I used to run a restoration company. We had a problem. It was pretty inefficient, costly, getting documentation from the job sites into the office, documenting, reporting to insurance companies. It was taking forever. Couldn't find a good solution, so I decided to hire a software engineer, build something that works for us. It worked really well. And then I decided to help the entire industry and solve the problem throughout. So industry had little to no innovation, so it wasn't really hard to come up with a solution that actually solves the problem. And we're really focused on solving the problem for the end user, the person on the job, somebody who's working physical labor, 8-10 hours. You know, they don't want to learn how to use another software. It's got to be super easy on a mobile device and get through it.
And now that you're successful in your business and you, Tanis, see so many deals, with the economy where it's at, what are you guys looking for as far as opportunity goes today? Because there's so many more options and opportunities in roll-ups, acquisition. There's a variety of things. When the market was so competitive, people were just throwing money at us. Today, we can go bargain shopping. What are you looking for today, Tanis?
Well, actually, my angle at this point is actually to assist and seek out co-founders as they're going for financing. That's sort of the role that I'm taking on now, and advising and helping co-founders as they go through this transition stage where money was frothy and everything was great, and now they're looking at each other going, how are we going to raise the next round? And they're attacking each other. And so my big goal at this point is to be able to get in there and assist these co-founders with reassessing their business model, ensuring that they're on the same page vision-wise, even if that means looking at the need to pivot, or even if that means looking at the need to exit and saying, we're not going to be able to make this happen. How do we prepare for this? And ensuring they're on the same vision. And so that's kind of the goal of what I'm working on now, with the book and with all the different sundry things, to make sure that co-founders go through this next stage and they can raise money they're aligned, they're united, they're able to move the vision forward with their business as they make the changes.
And what about the money that's already there? Mm-hmm. You know, I think one of the issues that co-founders have is it's not just raising more money, it's dealing with when things get tough, the people have already put their money in. Yeah.
If they haven't already put the brakes on, like slam the brakes on, because it's not the time to be thinking anything. It's time to think lean. It's time to think about the risk of falling apart, because a lot of times I think founders, they take so much responsibility for their team, and they think, I don't want to lay anybody off, I don't want to do any of that. But the risk of not laying a few off could potentially mean the risk of solvency or everybody losing their jobs. So there's a prioritization, I think, that co-founders need to look through their business with the lenses, and that really comes with making sure you spend your money properly.
And Joe, you see that in your business, because you are expanding and growing. Are you cutting back?
We've always been lean.
Yeah.
We said that's the basis for it, being efficient, but then also making sure we can achieve that by being coordinated.
Yeah.
So we're not incurring expense before it actually counts.
Yeah.
It's kind of like making a dinner. You know, if you don't time the sauce right in the end, it's not going to be a good outcome. So it's important everything connects.
I love that. So technology has changed, a paradigm has shifted this year with AI and the exposure that all businesses have to it. It's been there a while. I'm a technology person and have invested in it over the last 5 years, but it hit chasm where everyone on their own phone can have some sort of application. And for me, since 1992, technology has always been a servant. The interesting thing about technology today is that and the economy in its reconciliation is that for the first time we are laying off people as we should be, but we're also hiring people at the same time.
Yeah.
I would love to know kind of where and how you balance who are we laying off and who should we be hiring at this cutback mm-hmm. break
yeah.
type of position.
Yeah, I think, again, when I advise co-founders, I think that's a big portion of it, to ensure that they really have an honest and clear vision to where they need to be in the next, let's hope, 18 to 24 months, and say, where are we going to make the most impact, and then adjust accordingly. Where are we going to be able to save? Should we be able to, you know, cut down, be more efficient there? Or where do we need to grow? What is that one piece of our business, the 80-20 rule, right? Where are we really making our money? Let's go after that portion. We might need to grow that. And then let's cut off this excess. And again, it's really important that the founders are on the same page, because if one is saying, you know what, that's not where I want to go, they literally both have to be, yeah, let's do this and go. Otherwise, dangerous.
Are you seeing disagreements in your own company or others as far as where to go?
You know,
because you have investors, right?
Yeah. People always have different opinions because they have different points of view, so it's a different perspective. But that's why it's required to put enough work to get everybody aligned.
Mm-hmm.
And when everybody works in the same direction, you get to the goal so much quicker.
Now I'm going to turn the page into an area that I love as far as leadership goes and entrepreneurship goes, and it's the ego side of things. Mm-hmm. So I believe there's fear of the past and fear of the future, and that's it. I think it's important for us to identify how we prescribe our ego-based consciousness to the fear of the past and fear of the future. And you're looking at someone who lost over $100 million, so I'm expert at the fear of the past. I'm not very good with the fear of the future, obviously, because I will tell you, if you have fear of the future, you are not losing over $100 million. But it will create great fear of the past. You both have to deal with this ego-based consciousness. What are some of the lessons that you help people learn, hopefully without losing all their money, like me, because it makes it easier to learn it that way? It's more painful, but it's easier to learn. The lesson is very apparent about ego. But before everybody crashes because of ego, what are some of the lessons that you can share that you may advise some of your entrepreneurs and yourself and your partners as well, Joe?
Yeah. I love that you chose ego, because I dedicated an entire chapter to it. Because as
first of all, let's talk about the book. What's the name of the book?
The Co-Founder's Handbook.
Co-Founder's Handbook.
Yeah.
Everybody that's a co-founder or a founder should have
that's
one.
Right.
All right.
So, and the reason I did that is because as I interviewed so many founders, what I found when they broke down was someone had an ego, an out of proportion ego. And one of the things that's so important is that when you're in a partnership, you are united and no one is above the other. And you have to constantly see each other as united going forward. And so there's humility involved, there's grace for one another. And I think that if you can do that between founders, then that trickles down to your team. It becomes a top-down type of environment where everyone then models that throughout your company and you become a company of integrity. And I think that ego, we're the best, or I have all the answers, those ideas end up actually being extremely destructive. So I actually often advise people to check the ego. Check it, leave it behind. We're all in this to win. It's a win-win situation. So let's go forward in that way.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And how's ego interplaying with you?
Similar thing. I always tell people, focus on logic, common sense. As long as we're here to get the job done, it's a clear objective what we're trying to achieve. We're just going to go through it. And I tell people, take the emotion out of it, because if we run our business based on emotion, there will be drive-by shootings every day. But that's not a good business practice, so we don't do it.
Yeah. I felt that way here at Collision with my own team. As we have herding cats walking over here, and my notes and everything else I'm dealing with. I'm looking, it's so funny because I do so many of these and I'm like, how is it that my notes doesn't even mention the book? And at least they had their name right and I got it wrong, Tanis. But I always like to illuminate my human imperfections. I'm gonna get a little deeper on ego though. This is one of my favorite subjects that people don't talk about, but seasoned vets like you will get this. So I believe there's two types of ignorance. There's ignorant humility, which is great in a co-founder situation and with investors. Hey, I don't know what I don't know, but I do my best. I learn lessons and have fun. Come with me. Do your best. Learn lessons with me and have fun. That's a beautiful relationship. I don't see it that often. Here's an interesting one, the ignorant, arrogant people. And so we see this a lot, but there's another type of ignorant, arrogant that comes to our mind of, I know everything. And this is the one I think that's the most dangerous, especially in co-founder relationships with investors, especially if they've gone through a family and friends round or early stage angel round where it's personal, right? The investment is in Anderson, you know, turning down a $1 billion clubhouse offer, right? There's no emotional pity for those guys. That's just admitted. So this ignorant arrogance is scary because just like a parent, the co-founders are damaged because they care so much about their family and friends and their angel investors that they're more afraid for them than they are for the business. And parents do this all the time, right? They'll give you advice because they're more afraid for you. So they'll be like, take that job, be a real lawyer, right? It's doctor, true. Lawyer, failure. and I live that if you could feel the pain. So how do we deal with the ignorant, you know, arrogance of people that are just superior. But how do we deal with the loving, ignorant arrogance that really can put the business and the co-founders at extreme jeopardy because they're so scared for the investors and losing their money?
Yeah, I think that one of the things that I notice is that communication breaks down when expectation is at its highest. So I think it's fine figuring out what the expectations are that everybody has and communicating to them the truth. So when it comes to family, explaining to them, I want to and I will protect you, but I have a new set of people to be concerned about and I'm going to need to make decisions that reflects for everybody. And you have to have those difficult conversations, which I think nobody wants to have. And same thing with investors. Early on, we're so desperate sometimes for the funding that we hold our tongue and we don't say the things that are important. But one of the things I'm often advising co-founders is to say your investors, anyone who gives you money is now technically your co-founder. And they're going to have a say. They're going to want to do stuff. So you need to set parameters. You need to set expectations. You need to communicate clearly so everything's on the table and it saves you down in the future. Because exactly that ignorance, when it's there, for whatever reason, it can be destructive. But if you can have that communication, say, here, we're going to do what's best for the company so that we all win, then I think it takes the emotion out of it, and it allows everybody to move forward and get educated and make the right decision.
And how's this ignorant arrogance of fear playing in your business?
There's no place for arrogance. You know, put the ego aside. When somebody did something wrong, making sure that nobody's pointing fingers at the person. So we're all going to do things wrong. It's about getting it right when it's wrong and keep moving towards the goal. The key thing is to know what the goal is, and then what's the next goal and the next goal. So,
I love Joe. He's like interviewing a head football coach. They're like trained just to like, it's all factual, right? Like Tanis over here has these like colorful stories and antidotes, and Joe's just like, so first, no room for arrogance. And that's it. I love it. That measure.
We're a good team. Like
you guys are.
Show,
you guys.
Yeah.
Investment opportunity.
Show here.
You should. Trust me, it'd be a lot better off without me. Anyway, you guys are great. Just to finish out, and this is an issue that a lot of people don't talk about. I have a 2-minute drill. In fact, the winner of Web Summit, the 5 best pitches go on my TV show on Apple, and they can win like $50,000 in cash and prizes. But I'm amazed how people overlook integrity in co-founders, in the pitches, in the communication. And it's usually either an unintentional, like you talked about, hopeful. And so they'll say things like, my revenue is up 300%. And then some of the investors don't even ask, well, how much revenue did you have last year? Oh, $9, right? But you lost all credibility to me.
Yeah.
And so how do we help co-founders? And I'm sure it's in your book about the importance of integrity and credibility in what you say as you're pitching to your investors and to your other co-founders.
Yeah. I currently am in the process of raising 2 teenage boys. And
good luck.
And one of the things I've been saying a lot to them lately is that your reputation will always precede you. And the older you get, the more important your reputation becomes. And so I think one of the things to talk to entrepreneurs as they're building their business is, you know what, let's assume success. Let's assume you're going to grow. You might do this again down the road. You want to make sure that when you have to provide a reference, because that's like a big thing, obviously, when you're raising money, that your reputation will follow you. So you have to be so essential or intentional about every word that comes out, because that is slowly defining you as an entrepreneur and your image as who you are. And so you need to be able to carry that with you. So that integrity is not, it's priceless. You lose that, you'll never raise money again. You'll have a reputation that investors will say, eh. And nobody wants to have risk when they're dealing with money. So integrity is essential.
Yeah, integrity is one of the fundamentals. So do the right thing no matter how hard it is.
Yeah, well, my favorite quote is always be kind to your future self, including doing good deeds and being honest. And it's truly, and the reason is that we can change the meaning of our own past. We know who we are today and what we've learned, but it's very, very difficult to change the meaning of your past to someone else. So we mostly see this with siblings, for example. By the way, the only thing harder than raising 2 teenage boys is raising 3 teenage daughters.
Touché.
I hate to one-up her, but
fair enough.
This hair says it all, or what's left of it. But maybe we should get the kids together.
Yeah, exactly.
Talk about a great combo.
Right.
Your looks and brains. What would I bring to it? My wife's.
My
wife's, right? Exactly. It's not easy being an entrepreneur, and we need guides. We need mentorship. I always say the fastest way to get to where you want to be is find someone that is where you want to be and ask them for direction. Isn't that what your book really has given? That's what your experience, Joe, has given as well. I feel so blessed to have you both here, and I want to thank you so much. Here at Collision, I am with Tanis George and Joe Tolzman. We are at the Next Stage podcast at Collision. We hijacked it. This is Dave Meltzer with Entrepreneurs, the Playbook.